so hard, my bass and fun.
Read so hard, library's trying to find me. They can't identify me. Checked in with a pseudonym, so I guess you could say I'm Mark Twaining. Read so hard,
that shit cray.
That shit cray.
Ain't it, eh?
Read so hard,
what you reading?
What you reading?
D-Montaigne.
Read so hard, you use a Kindle? I carry spine, supporting bookshelves like a bra. Calvin Klein.
Hi, you're listening to Drink
Book
Signers.
My name is Emma.
And I'm Kim, and we're professional booksellers.
And casual drinkers.
So we are working on scheduling a ton of really awesome guests for 2016. So in the meantime, while we're waiting, while you're waiting, we've decided to give you guys a quick episode of our favorite books of 2015 and a few books to look forward to in 2016.
Along with a couple of clips from other booksellers and what they're looking forward to in 2016.
Hey, yo. Okay, so. All right.
But before we do that, we should talk about what we're reading and what we're drinking. It's my favorite part.
Oh, okay. Okay, Emma, what are you reading / what are you drinking?
I'm drinking an oatmeal stout by Schlafly.
Well done.
It's from a box of 12 different stouts. It's from a box of 12, it's from a pack of 12 stouts. 4 different kinds.
Well done.
3 kinds each.
So it's a variety pack.
Variety pack.
Very exciting. I'm just drinking Sierra Nevada's Hop Hunter IPA right now, which is, brewed with farm distilled hop oil.
Oh, man. That's
fancy. Another IPA. It's nice. It tastes good. Emma, what are you reading right now?
Couple books, as you might imagine. But I'd actually rather talk about what I just finished.
Okay.
So I was reading a book called See You in the Morning by Maria Case, who is going to be doing an event at a Brooklyn store after this is, it'll already have happened by the time you're listening to this. But I'm really excited because she's going to be there with Sella Sederstrom, who wrote Slab, which I also just read, and Jessa Crispin, who is the creator of Book Slut and is also coming out with a book called The Creative Tarot, which I'm currently reading. So I think this is probably the first time that I've ever planned on going to a lit event where I am, like, really into all of the authors. It's very exciting.
That bodes well.
Yeah. So See You in the Morning was kind of YA, but I don't think it's technically YA. I mean, it's coming from a small press, and I feel like they're a lot looser about that kind of genreification. But it was just about this girl, like, right before her senior year of high school, and just feelings, but also it was, like, kind of dark and interesting. It was good. I really liked it.
Nice.
And Slab, I'm gonna have an even harder time describing, is, about a stripper named Tiger, but also it's about, I don't know, there's like I'm pretty sure she's in a place where a hurricane just hit. Also, she talks about a lot about the devil and God, and she's being interviewed by Barbara Walters. It's nice. Nuts. And it only took me like 2 days to read. It was so good.
Bravo.
And The Creative Tarot is about tarot cards, but reading them as a way to unblock your creativity. And I just got a pack of Night Vale tarot cards, so pretty excited to learn how to read those.
Nice.
Yeah, they're really pretty.
Nice.
All right, that's it for me.
Okay.
What are you reading?
Well, I guess, so I will also say what I just finished. I'm going to use this as an opportunity to cheat. So I just finished a book called Adulthood is a Myth.
Oh, yeah, me too.
By Sarah Anderson, yeah. So they had copies of it at Winter Institute, which we were both just at, which is a big bookseller, nerdy convention, and it's awesome. They had Adulthood is a Myth there. It's coming out in March, and literally everybody on Facebook has been freaking out about a single, like, one comic panel, and has been sharing. I got, I think, 3 people within, like, a 24-hour period, like, texted me, this comic.
I was one of those people.
You were one of those people. It's essentially like, Sarah has one of the panels is like how I spend money. It's like groceries, like just the basics, clothes, an occasional splurge, but mostly necessities, household items, whichever brands are cheapest. And then it says books, and she shows up and she's at the bookstore counter with like a fur coat and like baller like sunglasses on and just like throws money in the air like a pimp. It's pretty fucking awesome. So anyway, you've probably seen this on Facebook if you're a book person, or just Reddit or the internet. But it's coming out in March, and I literally read it in a single sitting because it's also just a comic collection.
Yeah.
So it's fast, but it was so good. And I'm just very excited. Also, the cover has like the sweater on the cover.
Oh yeah, you can touch it.
Is fuzzy, so like tactile books. Very exciting. So yeah, so I just finished that. And then right now I'm currently reading Steve Olson's new book called Eruption, which is the untold story of Mount St. Helens. So as a Pacific Northwesterner, very exciting. And then I'm listening right now to Janet Mock's Redefining Realness, which is really good. It's a narrative of her, so she's a trans woman, and it's kind of a narrative of her coming into herself. It's a good listen. She's extraordinarily well-spoken. And
does she narrate it?
Yeah, she narrates it.
That's cool.
It's really great. It's pretty painful to listen to at times. She's currently going back into her sex work days, which is just, you know, but she does, like, she talks about it in a way that's so educated, and she talks about, like, the societal repercussions and the way that we've, like, kind of created this as the only access point for a lot of marginalized women. She's just smart as hell, and it's a really good read. It's out in paperback, so it's, like, super easy for people to get, you know, their hands on. So that is what I'm reading.
Nice.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
All right. So should we start by looking back at 2015?
Yeah, it seems like a good thing to do.
Now, I would suggest that we go, you know, back and forth, but I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to do two, and you can do one.
We literally just had this conversation where you said, hey, Kim, we'll do three.
Yes.
And so I picked three.
Right. I picked three that I think I haven't necessarily talked about too much on the podcast, and then I picked three that I had talked about on the podcast.
Oh, we were literally talking on the phone about this 5 minutes ago, Emma.
Yeah, you're right. I have seven.
Okay. Fine. Okay. Well,
so
then
I'll start?
You start. Why not?
All right. So everybody knows that I loved Uprooted by Naomi Novik. For those of you who don't know, it is a fantasy novel that I kind of equate to Game of Thrones in its, like, bloodiness. Have you read it yet, Kim? I got it for Kim for Christmas.
I have not read it yet.
It's disappointing.
I'm the worst. It's been, like, 3 weeks. 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks since we saw each other. It's okay.
It's really good. It's got an awesome female friendship in it and a little bit of romance and a sentient murderous forest. So, I mean, that's really all I need in a novel. And speaking of fantasy, before we started the podcast, I had read a book by, you may have heard of her on this podcast, Kat Valenti.
Never heard of her.
Wrote a short fiction collection called The Bread We Eat in Dreams. Which, honestly, I just picked up because the title is awesome, because I love bread. And that's a really funny collection of, just weird-ass short stories. I mean, that's my wheelhouse. Weird-ass short stories.
That works.
Yeah. Alright, your turn.
Okay, well, I'm gonna cheat, too. Mm.
Cheaters never prosper.
Except on book podcasts, where everybody wants him to cheat. So the first, I guess I'll go with a graphic novel. In 2015, Super Mutant Magic Academy came out by Jillian Tamaki.
Good one.
Yeah, Tamaki also wrote, or co-wrote with, well, I guess she illustrated for Mariko Tamaki, who is her cousin, Skim, which is a really incredible graphic novel. And then this one, Summer, which won a shit ton of awards like a couple years ago when it came out. So Super Mutant Magic Academy, I had somebody come into the store actually like 2 days ago that was like, so my friend likes Harry Potter and graphic novels, and I was like, well, duh. So essentially, it's kind of like an X-Men meets, like, prep school Harry Potter sort of thing, which I guess is kind of the point of X-Men.
Yeah.
Never mind. So the point is, it's kind of like that, but better. It's a prep school for, like, mutants and witches, so there's all this, like, supernatural stuff going on in their lives, but at the same time, what the book really does well is really explore the relationships between the characters and, like, how they interact with the world. It is one of the most realistic depictions of young adulthood that I've seen, which is funny because it's got, like, magic and
yeah. stuff
like that. But, like, but their emotions and what they're going through is just really fucking incredible.
Mm.
So it's great. And it's all ages. So, you know, it's a really good book to give to teens, but it's also just so smart and so dead on, and everybody will love it. So that's a great one. So that came out in 2015. And the other one I'm going to talk about, because you cheated, I'll stay on the graphic novel kick, is Bitch Planet by Kelly Sue DeConnick. So Bitch Planet was, like, such a cult favorite that within, like, a couple, or an issue, perhaps, people who I know and love and respect were going on getting tattoos.
Yeah.
Based on it. Like, within a single issue, not the trade, an issue for this comic series. It's essentially, the basic premise is, in a futuristic world that is run by the patriarchy, unlike our current world, any women who are essentially...
Non-compliant.
So essentially, any woman who is a pain in the ass of the patriarchy, in whatever way the patriarchy decides that means, is sent off to Bitch Planet, or essentially a correctional facility off-planet. So it is one of the strongest, most intersectional looks at our current society. And also just, like, you know, delves into, like, the prison industrial complex and, like, what it means to be a person of color and, like, what it means to, like, navigate multiple, like, marginalized identities. And it's just, it's really incredible, and it's, you know, very crude, so not all ages, but it's really incredibly done. So the first trade is out as of last October. They're still coming out with the issues that would become the second trade, so it might take a while. I think Kelly Sue DeConnick is been a little busy.
She's a lot of stuff going on.
She does all She's the awesome. Things.
All right, my turn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all right, this is tricky. Do I go on to more graphic novels? Because I also have two.
Yeah, go for it.
No, I think I'm going to take a break.
Okay, don't go for it.
And I'm going to go with another book that I know I didn't talk about on the podcast because I read it all the way back in January, but I'm pretty sure it's coming out in paperback soon. So it's called Vivian Apple at the End of the World by Katie Coyle, mm-hmm. And it is this badass YA book that is basically about a near future world, basically America, but, like, a little bit worse, where everyone is kind of expecting the rapture to happen, or at least a very vocal group of Christians are expecting the rapture to happen, and the main character, Vivian Apple's parents, are some of those people. And then it does happen. One morning, after a badass rager, Vivian comes home and there are two parent-shaped holes in her ceiling. But being a cool, skeptical teenager, she doesn't really think that the rapture has happened. So she and her best friend Harp and this cute guy that she met at the Badass Rager decide to go cross country to figure out what really happened. And this is not, like, one of those predictable books. Like, I had no idea where this was going. And there's a sequel that is also out now, and I still haven't read it, but maybe I'll read that next. Anyway, Vivian Apple at the End of the World was really, really good. Post-apocalyptic dystopian YA.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, I lied. I'm gonna do another graphic novel. Nimona.
Ayo.
By Noelle Stevenson. Ugh. Man, I just... This book was so good. I'm so jealous of Noelle Stevenson. She's so amazing, and her drawing style is so gorgeous, and Nimona is so smart and funny and queer, and it's a fantasy about a villain, but, like, obviously he's not a villain because he's the main character, And there's magic and there's science and it's awesome.
She's also the same one who does Lumberjanes.
Yes.
For, I'm pretty sure we've
Friendship to the Max.
We've freaked out about Lumberjanes in the past. So Nimona is like a great standalone if you just, you know, are caught up on Lumberjanes and can't wait for more.
Yeah. And you like fantasy and shape-shifting and jokes and...
And just smart fucking female protagonists.
Yeah. Ugh. So good. So good. Mm-hmm. All right. Your turn.
Okay. Well, this is an easy one. So my fiction pick from 2015 is obviously Lydia Yuknovich, The Small Backs of Children, which came out, I don't know, in the spring, I think? I don't know. Small Backs of Children is just, it's one of the most incredible raw books that I've read in a very, very long time. I'm a little obsessed with Yuknovich as an author in general, so what never.
You might call her your Kelly Link.
Yeah, pretty much. It's incredible. I talked at a customer for like 15 minutes the other day about Small Backs and how excited I was about it. She's a teacher and was doing a class on how we navigate the world within the context of like war and violence. And I was like, well, I've got a good contemporary pick for you. So
nice.
So that's that. And I'm not going to cheat by picking another one. So.
Oh, well, I'm about to look embarrassing. So remember I was talking about Uprooted, which the main character is a witch. So speaking of witches, one of the many nonfiction books I read, because it was actually a pretty good year for me in nonfiction, was Witches of America by Alex Marr, which I'm pretty sure I mentioned here. And that was kind of a memoir, kind of a microhistory about Wicca and witchcraft and Alex Marr kind of like going to research it, but not really being able to stop herself from being like, though skeptical, still seriously interested in like Wicca and everything and actually attempting to, I don't have the right verb, but like dabble in the craft herself. And that was just it. I've always been kind of fascinated with Wicca and witchcraft, in like the reality sense. I mean, obviously who doesn't like it in a good fantasy novel, but, she really had such a good, like very willing to, she was never snarky, basically. She never like was making fun of the people who like really believe in this stuff. She was always like skeptical, but intrigued. So yeah, Witches of America. It was really good.
It was also great on audio.
Oh yeah, you listened to it.
Yeah, I listened to it. It was great.
So I'm gonna cheat since what? How many more do you have left?
Well, I was gonna retroactively cheat and go back to the fiction.
Another fiction pick?
I got a second fiction pick.
Yeah. All right. You go ahead.
So the other book that I read last year that I became obsessed with actually came out in 2014, but was not on my radar until this year because it was published by a super small press. There's a author named Chloe Caldwell who wrote an essay collection called Legs Get Led Astray.
Love the title.
Yes, so good. Actually published by Kevin Samsel, who was a guest on one of our episodes from Pals. So she had another collection come out from a different press, or not a collection, a work of fiction called Women, that is a very short novella about a woman who doesn't necessarily identify as queer falling in love with another woman, and kind of tracks her relationship from like trying to figure that out through like the end, and then also, but it's not a coming out story like we normally see, because she's an adult and she has a better understanding of like, I don't know, the way that adult relationships work, not to make the coming out stories of the teenage years any less important. But,
sure.
But it's a very different dynamic. And it's a lot about just really exploring the relationship between women in general, even outside the queer realm, and what it means to like fall in love and fall out of love and the kind of blurred lines of friendship and romantic relationships. So it was really beautifully done. She's incredible, and the book itself is just a perfect encapsulation of what it means to fall in and out of love in your 20s, or really at any time in your life, regardless of gender and sexuality stuff. So Really beautiful. Anyway, it's fantastic. So that's my second pick for fiction.
I mean, I didn't even separate them out by genre. So how many more do you have?
I've got two nonfiction.
All right, then I have two too. So to come back to graphic novels.
There you go.
Kind of nonfiction, but not actually really at all. The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage.
There you go.
By Sydney Padua. That was one of the best graphic novels I've ever read. It is basically about Ada Lovelace and Charles Babbage, who were technically the first computer programmer and computer builder?
Sure.
All right.
They weren't really computers at the point, so like it's hard to like really describe what they were.
Yeah.
Yeah,
It was all mostly theoretical. But in Sidney Padua's graphic novel, she basically posits, like, what if they actually did create the first computer and then used it to, like, fight crime and have fun? I'll tell you what happens. It's awesome, and the adventures are thrilling. So, The Thrilling Adventures of Lovelace and Babbage also kind of makes you feel smarter when you read it, because it has a shit ton of footnotes. I'm sure you could enjoy the book, like, by just skipping the footnotes too, but I really learned a lot about computers and history and science, so I recommend reading it all the way through completely. It's long, though. It's a lot.
It's not that long. I mean, it's not like...
It's dense.
It's dense because of the footnotes, yeah.
All right, you have two more, and I have one more, although, you know, I could go on forever.
Okay. So, my nonfiction pick, I'm fairly sure everybody has heard of at this point. It's Between the World and Me by Ta-Nehisi Coates. We did talk about this, I think, back on our episode with Caitlin from Word. Essentially, Coates wrote some really incredible pieces of journalism about what it means to be a black man in America. And he then made that into essentially a letter to his son. At this point, like, it's... This year has been so fucking fraught, and I think that for the first time in at least my fairly limited memory as a younger person, our generation and our society are kind of waking up to the fact that, like, there is this incredible divide between what we thought was happening from a racism in our culture standpoint and what is actually happening. So it really, like... I think has hit close to home, and has really shown us how much institutionalized racism is happening. And even if it doesn't really give solutions, because I'm not sure that there are any, I think that the fact that sales of Between the World and Me have been so strong, I think is one of the most important things that has happened this year in the bookselling world.
Yeah.
Because I think for the first time we're actually reading narratives from people of color and actually being like, oh shit, this is actually happening. I know that there's been some interesting, I guess criticism is a strong word for it, but criticism of Between the World and Me, because like its audience seems to be a lot of white people. But like, let's be real, as white people, we need to shut the fuck up and listen to people of color.
Yep.
So I think that's important. So regardless of who the intended audience is, or who is really picking this up, I think Coates' book is just, like, it absolutely required reading, and I hope will continue to be that way. The other one that I'm going to talk about is The Argonauts.
Sure.
By Maggie Nelson.
Read the fucking Argonauts.
Read the fucking Argonauts. If you listen to our Holiday Picks episode, you understand how important The Argonauts is to my coworker. But the point is, The Argonauts was one of the most important books that I read this year on a personal level. Mostly because it surprised me when I read it. I didn't actually realize it was a queer book. I had, like, zero concept of what I was getting into, and it was such a pleasure to read and to just kind of live in the language. Nelson's book is essentially an exploration of what it means to look at your sexual identity and have an identity that then kind of gets turned on its head. Her husband, who... transitioned while they were together. So she has to deal with her own, like, sexual identity and really work through a lot of gender identity stuff as well. And really more so, it's a book about motherhood, which is something I don't give a fuck about. And Maggie Nelson made me give a fuck about motherhood, which is kind of crazy. So her language is just incredible. And the content, just to a certain extent, akin to Between the World and Me, the content is just extraordinarily important as well. So you will feel like you will feel like your worldview has changed after reading both of those books.
I would also like to affect some change, because I have noticed, especially in bookselling, that there is a certain, there's a certain genre that is frowned upon.
I know what's coming.
It's the romance genre.
Yes, it is.
And I would like to end our 2015 wrap-up by once again talking about Never Judge a Lady by Her Cover by Sarah McLean. Still the only romance book that I've read. Although, the Sarah McLean that recently came out has to do with books, so it's already loaded up on my iPad. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
It's very exciting. But Never Judge a Lady by Her Cover is a historical romance that is feminist and awesome. And it's basically about a woman who has been cast out of society, and instead of, you know, crying in a corner or whatever ruined, quote-unquote, women do, she decided to start a men's social club, a gambling hall, basically, and fuck everyone over. Because she's awesome. And also, you know, she falls in love and has sex and stuff. It's great. It's such a good book. Yeah, so romance is awesome, and people should stop looking down on it because it's very smart and interesting, and yeah, it's fucking sexy, so.
Retail hard libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
All right. Shall we move on to what we're looking forward to in 2016?
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
I don't plan on cheating.
I don't either, because we don't have time for that, so.
Right. Just a little bit.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay.
So I'll start.
Okay. I'll take your lead.
I'm going to go by type of book. So I'm going to start with a nonfiction book. Naked Money by Charles Whelan is coming out in April. And I haven't read it yet, but my coworker Carrie has, and he basically described it as kind of like a sequel to Naked Economics, which I read in 2015. So whereas Naked Economics was kind of about macroeconomics, Naked Money is about microeconomics. And this may all sound really boring, but the great thing about Charles Whelan is he makes economics so interesting and, like, actually, not even lying, laugh out loud funny. I laughed while reading a book about economics. So
you're also a spreadsheet nerd, so, like, you might be the target audience, Emma. Uh-huh.
I'm really excited about Naked Money. It's gonna be so good. Yeah. Do you have a nonfiction?
Yeah, actually, again, have nonfiction, fiction, and graphica.
Good job.
My nonfiction is a collection of essays from Annie Dillard called The Abundance. It's coming out in March. She's incredibly important in creative nonfiction writing, and her essays I read in, like, early high school, and they have stuck with me to this day. And I, like, every few years or so go back and reread. So HarperCollins is putting out a collection that I think is going to really bring her back into the spotlight, which is going to be really exciting. So it's narrative essays, new and old, some stuff that hasn't been collected in the past. And
when does that come out?
March 15th. Mm. Yeah.
So not nonfiction essays, but short fiction. What Is Not Yours Is Not Yours by Helen Oyeyemi is coming out in March. Haven't read it, but I read one of her novels, White Is for Witching. And she also recently came out with a retelling of Snow White called Boy Snow Bird. So she's all about fairy tales and weird short fiction, which, as we've already discussed, I am all about. And I am celebrating my 25th birthday this year by going to see her and Kelly Link in conversation. By the way, perfect. On the day that we're recording this, Kelly Link's Get in Trouble has come out in paperback. So that's my fiction short story pick for the year. I think that's going to be amazing because she's so smart and interesting.
So my fiction pick is a book that I think I talked about when I first read it because I couldn't not talk about it. I was so excited. It's Tuesday Nights in 1980 by Molly Prentiss, which comes out at the beginning of April. April 5th. And it is a New York novel, if you will. I actually read it right before trying to start City on Fire, which was, like, the big New York novel this last year, and I, like, got bored of City on Fire because it wasn't quite as good as what I was reading. Anyway, Tuesday Nights in 1980, again, it's, like, early 80s New York, mostly art scene. One of the things that really just killed me about this novel... one of Molly Prentiss's characters in the novel is an art critic who is synesthetic. So the way that he describes the world is, you know, very visual and sensual in a lot of ways that would normally sound super fucking cloying. Like, it would be so obnoxious if most authors, like, were like, yes, he saw his girlfriend as strawberries or something, as the taste of strawberries. Like, that would be so obnoxious normally, but the way that Prentiss does it is so nuanced and so beautiful that, like, I like literally was reading passages out loud to people and, like, handing it out to all my coworkers, being like, you have to read this now, please. So yeah, Molly Prentiss just did a fucking badass job with it, and I'm so excited to be able, like, I think this is the book I'm most excited to hand sell this year.
Nice. When's it coming out?
April 5th.
Nice. So this isn't really cheating because I know you don't have a kid's pick. So I have two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they're all part of series and they're all not the first in their series. In fact, they're all the end of series.
Okay.
All right. So, you may have heard me talk about Essie Groves' The Glass Sentence. Which is trilogy, the first in a trilogy, which is ending this July with The Crimson Skew. It's very exciting. I haven't read it yet, but The Glass Sentence was basically an adventure tale that had to do with, like, maps and time breaking. It was pretty complicated, actually, for a chapter book, and I really recommend it to 10 and up. And The Glass Sentence was very much about kind of travel and adventure. And then the second one, The Golden Specific, was a little bit more political. But of course, the politics of that world. And so I'm interested to see what The Crimson Skew skews towards.
But .
And then in the same fantasy vein... Another person that I might have mentioned once or twice or a million times, the Fairyland series is sadly coming to an end this March with The Girl Who Raced Fairyland All the Way Home by Kat Valenti. And
wait, by who?
Kat Valenti.
Who?
never heard of her. She wrote Radiance, another book that I really loved in 2015.
Six Guns Snow White.
Yeah, and The Bread, Wheat, and Dreams, which we might have mentioned earlier. Anyway, if you haven't heard of Fairyland, what rock are you living under? It's basically the best chapter book I've ever read, except for Harry Potter. I love Harry Potter.
Okay, calm down.
It's just about a girl in kind of a... Wizard of Oz type situation, new world, making all these new friends, overthrowing dictators, you know, the usual. I don't know what The Girl Who Raised Fairyland All the Way Home is about. I'm really excited and a little scared and sad to find out, though, because this series has been with me since I started bookselling, and I just want it to go on forever.
So when I'm hand-selling Fairyland to folks at the store, I say that it's essentially the Phantom Tollbooth meets Peter Pan with a female protagonist.
Ooh, I like that. And then you mentioned that your friend is getting a tattoo of it.
Yes. Well, no, only if I'm talking to, like, the youth.
Right.
If I'm talking to the adult, I don't do that because parents don't give a shit.
Sure.
But
in fact, that might scare them.
Yeah. So, no, instead I talk to, like, if I'm talking to a kid, I'm like, dude, this is so cool that, like literally my friend is about to get a tattoo from this book. So that's how I pitch it, and it works out quite well.
You go. Okay. Your turn. Yeah. One more.
Okay, so my last pick for 2016 that I'm very excited about is a book that was supposed to come out at the end of 2015 and got pushed back. So now it's a big October title, October 25th, and it is Ali Brosh's Solutions and Other Problems. For anybody who doesn't know who Ali Brosh is, she wrote a webcomic called Hyperbole and a Half, which was then made into a book that came out 4 years ago or so. 3 years ago, maybe? I don't know. It's been a while. And Hyperbole and a Half is essentially their comic essays, I suppose, accompanied by very sketchy, hilarious illustrations made in Microsoft Paint. And it is the funniest fucking shit that you will ever read. Like, you talk about laugh out loud funny, Ali Brosh just kills it. You know, everything from, like, talking about her stupid dog, and then the amazing thing about Brosh is that, kind of like Jenny Lawson, who wrote Let's Pretend This Never Happened and Furiously Happy from this year, Brosh has also talked about, like, really intense, important, like, mental health issues that don't normally get talked about. She kind of, I don't know, what is that phrase people use now? The kids use these days, like, she killed the internet? What is that? I feel really old. She killed the internet? She broke the internet. She broke the internet. I don't know. Whatever. Kids these days, am I right? Anyway, the point is, Brosh had this essay / humor blog post cartoon thing. It's hard to describe her.
You
because
really
like
know the jargon.
No, it's shut the fuck up. It's hard because we put her in humor, but she's kind of a comic artist, but she does, there's a lot of writing, like there's type in it. Anyway, Brosh had an essay come out that she had posted about depression, and then she just kind of went off, and it was one of those posts that got shared all over the goddamn place, because it was, again, kind of like, I guess, Between the World and Me. It was one of the first times that I actually really I think I finally got what it means to have depression. I've had a lot of friends who have struggled with a lot of different, you know, mental health stuff, and I've always, you know, tried to be as sympathetic as possible, obviously, and, like, try to be a supportive friend, and it never really, like, got it, and I know I still don't, but, Brosh's post, I think, hit hard on the people who had been trying to understand it for a long time, and finally got somewhere. I think we finally started to understand, or something clicked. So her stuff has just been so, like, incredibly important to so many people. And the exciting thing is that her new book, Solutions and Other Problems, is entirely new content, from what I understand, which is why it got pushed back more, because it wasn't just her recycled blog posts, it was entirely new stuff. So I'm so fucking excited, and I know that, like, it's gonna be just literally everywhere, in, like, every bookstore, indie bookstore that you go into, will be hand-sewing the shit out of it. So, she's incredible. Go read, like, everything she's ever done. So Hyperbole and Half, and, like, her entire web series. Go read it immediately.
Just whatever so those get, like, kids are calling web comics these
shut
days.
The fuck up. I'm not even 30 yet, okay? It's fine.
Not yet. Nearly, though.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Oh, wait. There's one more.
Of course there is.
We said we were going to share this one.
I haven't seen this, so I don't know if that's fair. Did you get a copy?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, so...
except for the cover.
Okay, so I just want to point out, Macmillan Reps, y'all are failing by not sending this out to, like, every fucking bookstore.
Yeah.
As an advanced copy, so that we can get excited.
So it's called The Lesbian Sex Haiku Book with Cats by Anna Pulley. And I really know very little beyond that. But what more do you need to know?
It's, it seems to be like, you know, it's cat pictures and lesbian sex haiku. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's
perfect.
It's essentially the perfect book for everybody on your gift list and for yourself, regardless of gender or sexuality.
Yeah. Treat yourself to some lesbian sex haikus with cats. Everybody deserves it.
It looks so good. Wait, when is that coming out?
Oh, that's a really great question. Fairyland, 99 poems, lesbian sex. Lesbian sex haiku cats.
Okay, it's coming out April 19th.
So it's coming out April 19th.
Oh my god, that's like... Wait, that's a day before your birthday and 11 days. Okay, so if anybody needs to know what to give me or Emma for our birthdays, which Emma's is April 20th and mine is April 30th, feel free to send the Lesbian Sex Haiku book with cats to either of us or both of us. You know where we work. Send the shit to Word and Elliott Bay and we'll be great. The perfect birthday present.
Retail hard libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So, on that note, should we play the clips and hear what other booksellers are looking forward to in 2016?
Yes.
Great.
Hi, this is Arietta Paliobagas from Country Bookshelf in Bozeman, Montana. And the book I'm most looking forward to in 2016 is the new Juan Gabriel Vasquez, and I believe it's called Reputations. I loved The Sound of Things Falling. I made a bunch of middle-aged women read it who don't normally read exciting things, and they loved it too, so I can't wait to force this on some other people.
That's great.
Hi, I'm Genevieve. I work at the Boulder Bookstore, and I'm looking forward to reading Jane Steele, Reader, I Murdered Him.
This is Sam Koss from Village Books in Bellingham, Washington, and I'm excited to get the chance to hand sell Into the Sun, which is a novel by Denis Elise Bichard. It's going to be coming from Milkweed Editions in September 2016. It's a sort of a sprawling and complex novel, but it's also an incredibly disciplined and focused one. It's set in the expatriate scene in Kabul, Afghanistan in 2012, among the aid workers, journalists, missionaries, mercenaries who have kind of gathered there in the decade after 9/11 and the U.S. invasion. This book is at once a murder mystery, a thriller, a meditation on the new manifest destiny, the way we go and bring our ideologies to the rest of the world in the 21st century. And it's also an exploration of the sometimes very extreme ways in which we seek to personally reinvent ourselves. It's an incredible novel. I think it will be this author's breakout, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it on the shelves.
So this is Carson Evans from Country Bookshelf in Bozeman, Montana, and the book I am most looking forward to is My Best Friend's Exorcism by Grady Hendrix, because he is weird and quirky and absolutely fabulous.
That sounds awesome.
My name is Stacy. I work at the Book Bar in Denver. My favorite book that's probably coming out in 2016 would be a book called After the Crash. It's a book about... Do you know what it's about?
Yeah.
It's about a crash that happens, and they find a baby, and so it's a mystery as who the baby belongs to. So that's what it's about.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Retail hard libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So that's going to be it for today. We are going to have a new episode out with our next guest, hopefully the beginning of March. So keep an eye out for that. If you haven't subscribed to Drunk Booksellers from Stitcher or iTunes or wherever you subscribe to things, you should totally subscribe, because we're trying to do once a month, but that's obviously a little flaky. So subscribe, and then you'll just get the episodes immediately.
Whenever they come out. Which
will be soon.
And every month.
And then every month. Hypothetically. We're working on it, guys. The holidays were really hard. I'm just going to say. Holidays are very hard for booksellers.
They're rough for retail.
Yeah. We just had to be slackers for a little bit. So, if you're not following us on the interwebs, you can do so on Tumblr and Twitter. We're pretty much at Drunk Booksellers, plural, everywhere except on Twitter, which is just a singular Drunk Bookseller. And so you can keep up to date with us there. If you have people that you would like us to interview as guests, please feel free to send us a email at drunkbooksellers, again, plural, at gmail.com. We've got quite a few people lined up right now, but we would love your recommendations and anybody you'd love to talk us to talk to. We'd like to hear them. So shoot us an email.
Yeah. And if you feel like giving us a review on iTunes, that would be cool too.
Oh, yeah.
Good, that's... bad, whatever. Just yeah. kidding. Only give us good reviews.
I mean, if you got bad reviews, you know, email
Send
us.
Send it to our email.
Email us.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. I am now marking my page. Don't want a crease on my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't want to forget this page. I've got bookmarks at home, but I forgot one for the road.
I have a bookmark that I can loan.
Know how many bookmarks I own? I am now marking my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Page.